Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Get select Ernie Ball strings, 3 for $10. Save $100 on a Fender Special Edition Strat, or get a Yamaha acoustic for just $199. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Lucas San. Today is Monday, March 6th, 2017. It's our first episode of the week. We're back at you. We will be here Monday through Friday, just like every week. And so today we actually have quite a bit of Clippers basketball to talk about, which I know isn't always the case. A lot of times it feels like we're coming off of, like, you know, our second off day in a row. There's no game to preview because there's no game until tomorrow. There's no game to talk about because there hasn't been a game in a while. That's not really the case today. Since we last talked on Friday, the Clippers have played two games. And then tonight, the Clippers will be back in action again. So it's kind of been an eventful weekend. We've definitely given ourselves some, you know, I guess we haven't given ourselves some stuff to talk about, but rather the Clippers have given us some things to talk about. So I want to dive right in talking about some of the Clippers' recent games, especially their struggles since coming back from the All-Star break. Now, something that I've noticed specifically in the reaction to these Clippers' struggles is people talking about, I thought we were going to be good when Chris and Blake are back. Because it's disappointing, you know, we've been waiting forever. We've been saying, oh, you know, the Clippers lost this game, but they're without their star player, or they're without both of their stars. What do you expect? The roster isn't that good when they're missing all their guys. And that's something I said, you know, during this, when they lost six games in early January. People were like, okay, I know Chris and Blake are out, but should we really be losing to the Mavs? Yeah, the Clippers without Chris and Blake are worse than the Mavs. But the Clippers with Chris and Blake should be able to compete against the Spurs better than they did. They shouldn't be getting blown out by the Rockets like they did. They shouldn't be losing to the Milwaukee Bucks. So it's been disappointing. And that's definitely, I mean, it's definitely fair. But one thing that I do want to talk about that I thought was interesting that I noticed starting in the Houston game and then really being a trend in the games over the weekend as well was that the bench was just horrid. In this Clippers game, or in this Clippers Rockets game on Wednesday, which we already talked about, so, you know, I just want to mention it as kind of when I first really picked up on this trend. The Clippers were up 37-34 after the first quarter, and then immediately the Rockets came in the second quarter, went on a big run against the second unit, and I remember looking at my TV with, I think it was like 6 minutes left, somewhere around halfway through the second quarter, the Clippers were down by, I think, 13 points, and just thinking, the Rockets score so much that it's hard to come back against them. Because for you to beat them by 13 points, you have to get six stops and score six times in a row. Scoring six times in a row isn't that, you know, you get hot in the NBA, you go on scoring streaks, it happens. Stopping an offense as prolific as the Rockets six times in a row is a little rougher. So that, you know, really the bench coming in and letting up that huge run tanked that game. And then the next game against the Bucks, some of the plus minuses really tell the story of that game. So JJ Redick and Chris Paul and Luke Mbamute were all positive. Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, who both staggered with the second unit, were -8 and -4. And the big time bench players, and when I talk about the bench for this team, I'm really talking about four players, because the Clippers have a four player bench. They go nine deep, you know, dependably, reliably, they count on these nine guys. 10, they switch around. Sometimes they don't play 10th man. Sometimes they play Wesley Johnson. Sometimes it's Brandon Bass. Sometimes it's Allen Anderson. Sometimes it's mixing and matching those three, depending on the lineups that are on the floor. But so the four guys, obviously, Raymond Felton, Jamal Crawford, Austin Rivers, and Mo Spates. Rivers was minus 28 in 27 minutes. Crawford was minus 25 in 18 minutes. Spates was minus 16 in 10 minutes, and Felton was minus 14 in 15 minutes. And this is including some garbage time production out of those guys, basically, where it was actually much worse. Like, if you look through three quarters, the Clippers bench was much worse than those final plus-minuses ended up coming out to being. And those three guards, Rivers, Felton, and Crawford, combined for 10 turnovers. Now, a big reason why the Clippers lost this Bucks game, and I guess we didn't have an episode yet to talk about it, so we can't talk about it, is the turnovers. They had 23. The Bucks only had 10. You can't win on the road with 23 turnovers. The Clippers allowed 41 points off of those turnovers. So the Bucks scored 112 points, but their offense only really scored, what would that be, 71. And their fast break, or their points off turnovers, you know, whether that comes in a fast break or the defense isn't quite set, because, you know, it's hard to get back on defense after a turnover versus a shot. But 41 is a lot. I think in the Prime Ticket broadcast, they said is the most points off turnovers allowed in Clippers history since they started tracking the stat over 20 years ago. So maybe some of you, you know, lifers remember some game in San Diego where you swear it felt like they gave up more than on Friday against the Bucks, but it's pretty bad. It was the points off turnovers killed them, and the bench killed them. Then in this game against the Bulls, where the Clippers finally won on Saturday, the bench was bad again. The plus minuses weren't as bad because Jamal Crawford had one of those like vintage Jamal games. 25 points, 10 of 17 shooting, made some ridiculous shots. You know, sometimes, you know, I criticized Jamal for taking stupid shots. He made some stupid shots. He missed some stupid shots too, but 10 of 17, 25 points, you can't complain with the overall body of work. And that lifted the bench up to being around even. Jamal was plus 4, Felton was minus 3, Rivers was minus 1, Spates was plus 2, Wesley Johnson, who kind of completed that five-man unit, was minus 1. So the bench played even because four guys played badly and Jamal Crawford bailed them out. The starters built up a solid buffer. Blake plus 11, Luke plus 16, you know, on and on. And so the team ends up winning by 10 because the starters were roughly won by 10 and the bench roughly played even. But it's still kind of, you still have to ask, you know, Mo Spates, Austin Rivers playing badly, getting bailed out by Jamal Crawford, who was hot. And one thing that I think is notable with Mo Spates, because we know Austin's had his obviously the best year of his career. Mo Spates kind of has had the best year of his career too. But here's what worries me. December, 50% from the field, 46% from deep. January, 47% from the field, 46% from deep. February, 38% from the field, 34% from deep, and now in three games in March, 23% from the field, and he hasn't made a three yet. I'm worried about Mo, about if he peaked early, about if those two hot months were more of a flash in the pan. You know, it's hard to say that. Well, it's two. You know, you think it's 2 months; it can't just be a hot streak, but he's attempted 200 threes this year. That's not enough for a stable sample size. You don't really reach a stable sample size on shooting until about 500, and so few guys get to 500 three-pointers attempted that there can be a lot of variance over the course of a season. Obviously, we're seeing it right now, but for a guy who's never been as prolific a three-point shooter in his career as he has been for the Clippers this season, you have to wonder if he can keep it up for the full 82 games, and you have to worry that this is the game, or that not that this is the game, but that this is the time of year when he's slowing down. So if Mo Spates can get hot again, not necessarily tonight against the Celtics, but more in the big picture going into the playoffs feeling good about himself, that's big. If he's not getting hot again, even though his overall season stats might look good, what he's going to be giving you come playoff time might not be worth a rotation spot. Maybe you bring in Brandon Bass because he dives to the rim, and you just give up on having a stretch five and you want a guy who's going to roll and get dunks and space the floor for the other guys. But I'm not saying bench most Bates yet. I'm saying that those month-by-month splits are worrisome, and they're something that I've definitely been keeping an eye on for the last couple of weeks when it became apparent that he was going to have like a full bad February instead of just you know, a five cold games or whatever. The full month turned into a bad month after probably the two best shooting months of his career in what was December and January. So now I'm going to switch gears a little bit from those games. Or, you know, well, just briefly, I'll say that obviously the Clippers' loss to the Bucks was disappointing, but like I said, I saw a lot of chatter about, like, what does this mean for the core? We have the stars back. The Clippers should be winning this game. The starters played fine. It's not like they played great and lost, but they were fine, and they were really let down by the bench, and sometimes in an 82-game season, you have games like that. It's just that sometimes in an 82-game season, you let up a big run to the Rockets and can't catch up and get blown out by a team that isn't that much better than you. Sometimes in an 82-game season, you come out and lay an egg against the Spurs, and even though it's a good matchup for you, you lose by 10. You know, you lose to a really good team by 10 points. Sometimes in an 82-game season, you have a tough night in Milwaukee, and then you play Chicago on the second night of a back-to-back, and you lose that game. The point being, there's a lot of ways to rationalize games in the big picture. Because the Clippers did win that game in Chicago. They didn't lose it. That's the point, is that they could have lost that game, and you could have said, well, it's the second night of a back-to-back. They're playing a playoff team on the road, whatever. But in the big, once you start having to pull out those excuses for 4 out of 5 games, like the Clippers did after the All-Star break, it starts to get frustrating. And it's not just frustrating for us as fans watching the game, or us, the other us, as in us, the media, having to cover a team that is playing kind of uninspired basketball. But it's frustrating for the players, too. It's not like they like losing. Sometimes it can be hard to get as fired up as you are when you're at your best. And that's not to question the team's effort or say these guys don't love the game or any, you know, not anything like that. But you can tell there are some nights when teams play with more fire than others, and the Clippers have been in a little bit of a rut. But the bench slumping, the bench really playing horribly, really, in the last few games hasn't helped. But this win in Chicago was a good win. It was. And the Clippers didn't play great to win. Blake Griffin, 5 of 15. None of the starters had more than 20 points. They only made 24% from deep, so it's not like they got hot. They actually got out-rebounded by the Bulls, which is a bad sign, but it largely was Jamal Crawford carrying the team and the Clippers playing good defense and just playing well overall, even though their stars didn't lift them to victory. But tonight, the Clippers are now back in action, and one thing that's annoying about this patch of Clippers schedule is they don't really, even though they have a lot of home games, they don't really have a home stand. So a lot of NBA people will say the first game back from a road trip is like a road game because you're coming off of a plane going into a game instead of getting to have a game, go home to your own bed, and then have another game. So, you know, take that for whatever it means. But even though the Clippers have a lot of home games coming up, they just had two road games. Now they have a home game, two road games, a home game, a road game, a home game, a road game. Then they get three games in a row at Staples Center, one of them being at the Lakers. But then in the last, you know, 10, 12 games of the season, they start to get a little lighter on the travel. But it's like these home this home game against Boston, they have to come from, you know, the Clippers are coming from Chicago to play this game, and then they're leaving afterwards to go to Minnesota, so it's not quite as much rest as you'd like for a home game. But I am kind of excited for this Boston game, even though the scheduling is kind of brutal on me. Here in New York, you know, in the East Coast time, the game doesn't start until 10:30, and it's going to go until 1, and then I'm going to have to go take my dad to the airport super early on Tuesday morning. So that's, you know, I wish this game was in Boston so it could be a few hours earlier. But it is what it is. And I do like seeing the Celtics play because I greatly enjoy seeing Isaiah Thomas play. For all the, you know, people complain, well, he hurts them just as much on defense as he helps them on offense. But I think it's really fun to watch the little guy attack the lane like that. Now, if you're in Los Angeles, this could be a good game to get tickets for. And buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show that you want to go to. And none of the older ticket sites want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is always the first place that I go to look for tickets to a game or concert, and everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work, and you save time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all is that my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab, and click Add a Promo Code. Enter promo code LOCLIPPERS, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LOCLIPPERS today. Now back to Isaiah Thomas. The dude is scoring 29 points a game in the NBA, and he's shorter than I am. And, like, I don't even think I scored 29 points a game, like, on my middle school travel team. Well, I definitely didn't score 29 points a game. I don't know if I ever scored 29 points in a game. Forget about averaging it. Scoring 29 points in a game, even for, like, my middle school travel team, which was the last time in my life that I was the best player on a basketball team aside from, like, pickup. But that's great. 29 points a game, and he's shorter than me. It's not like it's LeBron out here, you know, being superhuman, or Kevin Durant. That's crazy. And you look at, if anybody follows the NBA Math Twitter account, they post these charts of total points added, total points subtracted on offense and defense. And you get to see the players that help their team's offense the most or hurt their team's offense, and help their team's defense the most or hurt their team's defense. And if you ever see them do an update on the Celtics one, a lot of guys are pretty close to the line. Or good players, you know, help one way and are some players help on offense and are average on defense, or help a little bit on both or help a lot on both. Like, you know, Chris Paul is a player who adds a lot of points for you on offense and subtracts a lot of points for the other team on defense. Isaiah Thomas is like 8 million light years ahead of every other Celtics player as far as total points added on offense, and 8 million light years behind every other player as far as points subtracted on defense. He hurts their defense so much, and he helps their offense so much, unlike anything. You know, I can't think of a player who's detracted so much from a team's defense. Even a guy like Steve Nash, who the Suns had to work so hard to hide on defense, he wasn't 5'9". It just becomes so hard to switch when you're already going to, you know, on a lot of nights he's 6 inches shorter than the other team's point guard. But then imagine trying to switch him onto, you know, the Clippers maybe aren't the best example. Maybe he always seems to play well against the Clippers. Maybe it's because the Clippers have a small backcourt, so he's able to take more advantage. But think about if he's playing against, like, the Thunder. He's not going to guard Russell Westbrook. He's not going to guard Victor Oladipo. And you're only getting bigger. Okay, well, is he going to guard Seth Lotia hasn't been there for years. Is he going to guard Andre Roberson? No. He's not going to guard one of the big men. So it really puts you in a tough spot, having a guy who's that little be your best player. But he's just so fantastic to watch. He's efficient, which I like. You know, that's one of my main things with Russell Westbrook. Even though he's exciting to watch and he creates highlights, he's not efficient and he has bad shot selection, and it bugs me. But Isaiah Thomas is efficient, and he takes a lot of threes, but he takes, like, confident pull-up threes in transition and off the pick and roll, and he attacks the basket, like, so fearlessly for a little guy and has the niftiest little finishes. It's a blast to watch. It really is. So that's, you know, I mean, I hope tonight he has a bad night, but that's going to be fun, I think. It's a treat to watch Isaiah Thomas play basketball. I think that's pretty much all I want to talk about as far as this Celtics game goes. Keep an eye on the bench. If the Clippers bench can not be horrible, or maybe if Doc Rivers finally staggers, because he's playing a 9-man rotation anyway, so why not stagger and play like 3 guards and Luke around DJ, and then bring Blake in the second unit with Mo Spade so that the rebounding's a little, you know, okay. But we'll see how Doc grows into this rotation now that he has a healthy team for the last month of the season. How the Clippers can contain Isaiah Thomas. And then another thing that might just be worth mention is if the Clippers can guard the Celtics' 3-ball attack. Boston isn't like an insanely prolific 3-point shooting team, but they do shoot it well, and they have Amir Johnson, who's starting but not playing a lot of minutes, but shooting very well from three at the power forward spot. Jay Crowder is having a career year, shooting 41%. Obviously, Isaiah Thomas can shoot, and they just have a lot of guys who are capable of shooting. There's really only actually just looking at like the 3-point shooting column. There's only one guy on their rotation who's shooting less than 33% from deep. Unless Tyler Zeller is like iffy on the fringe of the rotation. But the only real contributor who isn't a threat from deep is Marcus Smart at 30%. But even Jaylen Brown, Al Horford, Hrebko, all these guys make at least a decent percentage of threes. Terry Rozier, 33% even. So it's not like the Clippers where you have a guy like, well, DeAndre Jordan isn't going to shoot. Although something that I hadn't really considered is that now that Blake Griffin is shooting threes, and apparently he's been doing pretty well since he started shooting more in the last few weeks, in the Clippers' 9-man rotation, DeAndre Jordan is the only one who can't shoot, because Luke Mbamute is having a career year shooting the basketball too. Even though he's not taking a ton of shots, he's making a decent percentage of those open corner threes. But anyway, the 3-point attack for the Celtics, they didn't get hot against the Clippers last time, but they got open. The Clippers let them get 37 3-point attempts off in that last, or I'm sorry, it was way more than that. The Clippers let them get 52 3-point attempts off when the Clippers played them in Boston. But the Celtics only shot 31% for them. But they generated a lot of open threes. They could have easily put up 130 points on the Clippers if they had a hot shooting night. They probably kicked themselves watching the film, because even though they got the win, they didn't, you know, they got so many open looks against the Clippers defense. Now, that was in that stretch, early February. If you recall, the Clippers had a 4-game winning streak going into the All-Star break. The patch before that, they were playing horribly on defense. It's like, when Chris Paul got injured for the second time, the team just lost all of their inspiration to play good defensive basketball. They let up 100 points in every game for like almost a full month. This was a part of that stretch. The Celtics didn't get hot, so they only scored 107 points. They only shot 31% from deep. But the Clippers' defense wasn't there. It just didn't end up biting them that it wasn't there. We saw how they struggled against the Houston Rockets, who are another 3-point shooting team. Obviously, we know how they've struggled against the Golden State Warriors in recent years, the Warriors being the most prolific three-point shooting team of all time. Are they going to let the Celtics get 50 off again? Because if they let the Celtics get 50 off again, they're going to make more than 16 this time, and it's going to be a really hard game to win. That's my parting thought for you on this Celtics game. The last thing I'll solicit a little bit is suggestions on the most random Clipper that you can remember. Someone tweeted yesterday, name the most random NBA player of all time, and my response was, there are way too many Clippers that can go in this spot. The ones that always come to mind to me are Richie Fromm and Nick Fizikas. I forget what season it was, but I just remember having both of those guys and just watching, and like, they're both, you know, energetic because you pick up guys on 10-day contracts or minimum salaries or wherever they come from, and they're energetic because they really want to earn a rotation spot. They really want to earn a full season contract. They really want to get a chance to get more NBA minutes and prove themselves and have a career. But I just remember watching and just being like, who the hell are these guys? And it's my team, and I'm like, what? Where did you come from? There's a lot of Clippers that could be the most random NBA player of all time. So forget about most random NBA player, because this is not an NBA podcast. Who's the most random Clipper of all time that you can just remember, like, you're watching and you're thinking, like, who the hell is this guy? I think I did note this. I think the most random Clipper performance ever has to be Mike Taylor, 35 points at Madison Square Garden, and then he got cut the next summer. I like Mike Taylor was you know, a nice, energetic backup point guard, even if I guess he wasn't, like, really an NBA-caliber player. But just 35 points at Madison Square Garden was, like, just the weirdest thing coming from him. And then he was out of the league a couple months later and never came back. So that was crazy. But, yeah, tweet at me. Tell me, like, if you can go through my timeline and find that tweet and reply to it, cool. But if not, just tweet at me and make sure you don't just send, like, a name. Like, if you just tweet, at Lucas J. Han, Yaroslav Korolev, I'm going to say, what? But tell me, like, the most random Clipper of all time or something like that. That's a good transition. I just mentioned it. If you do want to tweet at me about that or anything, comments on the show, suggestions, whatever it is, you can tweet at me at Lucas J. Han. You can always email me, lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. You can, just to chat Clippers, tweet at ClipsNationSBN. Check out the Clips Nation site, clipsnation.com. And the Clips Nation Facebook page, just type Clips Nation in the Facebook search bar. And that's that. It's that easy to, you know, connect with me and the people who work with me on the blog and on the Clips Nation Twitter and other Clippers fans who comment and are in the mentions. Thanks for listening, guys. So we'll be back tomorrow with a new episode. Again, we're here every Monday through Friday, so this is for Monday, March 6th, and we'll be back tomorrow for our second episode of the week. This is Lucas Hand signing off for Locked On Clippers.